Hi everyone, Oisin here. I hope you're all well and will be able to spend time with your loved ones during the holidays in whatever part of the world you're in. If you have any questions about episodes, please feel free to check out the Troubles podcast on Facebook, Instagram or Twitter. Also, if you'd like to donate to the ongoing support of the show, you can do so at patreon.com/the-troubles-podcast. You could also donate once off by buying me a virtual coffee over at buymeacoffee.com/troublespodcast. You can also rate and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It all helps. Before we start, I want to talk about another podcast. Small Town Dicks is a true crime podcast hosted by Yardley Smith, the voice of Lisa Simpson, and Dan and Dave, who are identical twin detectives from Small Town, USA. Each episode features an investigation from a small town in America and is told by the detective who investigated it. 911 calls and suspect interviews bring these first-hand accounts to life, as well as shine a light on the fact that the violent crimes committed in these modest communities are no less depraved and vicious than they are in the big cities. They just happen with slightly less frequency. As fellow detectives, Dan and Dave anchor the show, while Yardley asks the questions that you would ask them if you had a seat at their table. Don't miss the thrilling new season of Small Town Dicks, available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to the episode. May 1987, and a police station in the small village of Lochall, Armagh, was targeted by an 8-man unit of the East Tyrone Brigade of the IRA. The plan was to ram a digger, or JCB, through the security fence and then light the fuse in a bomb which was loaded into the bucket of the digger. Then, when the bomb exploded and RUC officers came out, armed IRA members would get out of a van and open fire on the soldiers. The plan was simple, and the IRA were confident based on their past successes. But what they didn't know is that they were walking into a trap. And what would end up happening would result in the IRA's biggest loss of life in a single incident during the Troubles. This is the Troubles podcast, a podcast which explores the violence and bloodshed that occurred in Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, and Great Britain, as multiple sides and organisations waged a conflict over the status of Northern Ireland. By 1987, the British Army had checkpoints and barracks all over Northern Ireland, much to the frustration of the IRA. Since as early as the 70s, they had opened up a channel with Libyan dictator Muhammad Gaddafi, who had been sending them weapons and explosives. The IRA wanted to eliminate as many British checkpoints and barracks as they could, and began to operate a strategy which attempted to deny ground to the British forces. They would attack a checkpoint or police station by detonating a bomb, and then would rake the building with machine gun fire. They would then do their best to ensure that the base would not be built back up again once it was attacked. They successfully carried out this mission twice, once in 1985, where they killed two RUC officers, and then again in 1986, where they drove a JCB with explosives in it into the RUC Birch's barracks, completely destroying it. They carried this confidence into 1987 and began plotting to destroy the station in the small town of Lochall. In preparation for the attack, in May 1987, the IRA placed a 400-pound bomb into a small boat and moved it across Loch Nee in the centre of Northern Ireland and up the River Blackwater. The bomb was to be delivered to the East Tyrone Brigade of the IRA. They were the most active paramilitary Republican group of the IRA and were led by Patrick Kelly. The IRA planned to strike at 7 p.m. when the station was scheduled to close for the night, so they could attack the RUC officers as they clocked off and left the station. A digger was stolen from a farm 2 miles from the station, and some IRA men stayed with the owner so that they wouldn't raise the alarm. Declan Arthurs drove the digger, and 7 men were in the van behind him. The men arrived at the station with the digger and the van behind, as well as 2 scout cars that would act as getaway vehicles. One of the men in the van was wearing a bulletproof vest, the others were wearing gloves and balaclavas. They did 2 slow passes of the station. It should have been the shift end for anyone there, so it was unusual that no RUC officer was coming out. Jared got out of the van and joined Declan in the digger, and at 7:25 the digger crashed through the light security fence of the police station. This was also when 3 men from the van got out and fired at the station through the perimeter fence. In the van was Eugene Kelly, Patrick Kelly, Jim Lina, Porrick McKenney and Seamus Donnelly. It's not clear exactly who began shooting, but as the digger crashed through the fence, some of the men jumped out of the van and began firing at the building. It was at this exact moment the SAS soldiers who were lying in wait revealed themselves and opened fire on the IRA men. Unbeknownst to the bombers was that they had walked into a trap. The SAS had gotten wind of the operation up to 10 days before it was due to be carried out, and they had set up an ambush. Several RUC and SAS men waited inside the station and acted as decoys, while outside, a number of SAS men were concealed behind a row of trees alongside the road outside of the station. There were others positioned as well to cut off any potential escape routes. The eight IRA members were completely outgunned and outnumbered 3-1. One of the RUC Special Branch officers, who was inside the station at the time, described what happened on the evening as they prepared for the attack.
We went in on the night, the Thursday evening, just as darkness approached. We entered the station, along with our army colleagues.
The SAS?
The SAS, yes. And we set up base at the station, got ourselves settled, and then waited out for further instructions.
What goes through your mind when you see this JCB coming towards you?
Bomb.
As the IRA opened fire on the station, the 24 SAS men opened fire on them. In preparing for the ambush, they had established what's known as a kill zone, where there was a three-point triangular formation which would inflict the maximum amount of damage and reduce the risk of friendly fire. The SAS discharged over 600 bullets at the men, who were killed almost instantly, with the bomb in the bucket of the JCB detonating in the middle of the gunfight. The entire exchange lasted approximately 10 minutes, and the van that the IRA men were in was holed like a sieve, according to some news reports. One of the drivers of a nearby IRA scout car described what he heard. Quote, "We were at the pickup point, and then there was a rip as the bomb went up. There was a rattle of stuff, gunshots, and then there was a rattle of heavy stuff, British Army weapons. I turned to Scout 2 and said, 'They are giving her some rattle here.' It went on and on for what seemed like 3 or 4 minutes. It was fierce firing. Then, out in the distance, I saw a helicopter and I turned to Scout 2 and said, 'There's something badly wrong here.' At this stage, we were waiting on them, the IRA team, to come down and get away." The body of IRA man Declan Arthurs was found to be unarmed, with a cigarette lighter in his hand, as he was the one who lit the fuse on the bomb. An SAS soldier revealed during the inquest how he shot three men as they lay on the ground. The three IRA members who were travelling in a scout car managed to evade the authorities even though they were stopped at two different checkpoints. Unfortunately, two civilians were not as lucky. Anthony and Oliver Hughes were travelling home from work in their car when they happened across the ambush. Oliver had been repairing a lorry earlier that day and was wearing overalls that were similar to those worn by the IRA. Upon arriving at the scene, they stopped their car and were about to reverse. British soldiers believed them to be a backup IRA unit and opened fire on the vehicle. 34 shots were fired into their car, killing Anthony and badly wounding Oliver. Back at the scene, all eight IRA members were killed. They were Jim Lina, Porrick McKierney, Gerard O'Callaghan, Tony Gormley, Eugene Kelly, Patrick Kelly, Seamus Donnelly, and Declan Arthurs. If you include the civilian Anthony, who was killed as well, that brings the total dead to 9. Amelia Arthurs, who was the mother of Declan, who was found with the lighter in his hand, said, quote, "He was mowed down. He could have been taken prisoner. They knew that the boys were coming and they lay in wait. The SAS never gave them a chance. Declan died for his country and I'm very proud of him. He was caught up in a war and died." The driver of the scout car believes that the British Army had ample opportunity to arrest the men before opening fire. He said, quote, "I have no doubt it was a shoot to kill operation. It was a turkey shoot. They could have rammed the van. The boys were sitting in a vulnerable situation, crammed in the van. There was a 10-minute window from the lads going through the village first time to when they went back in again. They let the bomb through and they waited 10 minutes because they wanted them in the kill zone. There was ample time for arrests to be made. One IRA member, John Crawley, heard the news in prison and was initially happy, as he believed that the number of dead was related to British soldiers.
I was in my cell and reports that there's been an attack in Loughgall and there's 8 killed. And there was a cheer in the jail because people thought it was Brits. Then the final news report, all terrorists killed in operation. How was that even possible?
The men who died were treated as martyrs by the Republican movement and were given a Republican funeral, which included a gun salute. Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams spoke at their funeral, saying,
"Margaret Thatcher and all the other rich and powerful people will be sorry in their time that Loughgall ever happened."
This ambush had damaged the IRA. Somewhere along the lines, word had gotten out that they were planning this attack. They had a leak in its ranks and it became absolutely essential to stop the flow of information to the British Army. The IRA had their own internal investigation unit, which was quickly dispatched to flush out who was the spy. The only problem was, the person who they had selected to find the spy was in fact a double agent himself, and had been for a long time. His name was Freddie Scapatici, aka Steak Knife. Scapatici was the son of an Italian immigrant and grew up in the markets area of Belfast. In 1971, he was arrested by the British Army and interned without trial alongside a number of prominent IRA members. He was released in 1974, and by 1980, Scapatici was a leading member of the Internal Security Unit, and his job was to investigate leaks and find touts within the ranks of the IRA. A tout is another word for an informer. It all gets quite murky here, but it appears that Scapatici volunteered to act as an informer in 1978, after he was assaulted by a fellow IRA member. Back to Loughgall, and Gerard Hart was the local IRA man who was assigned to the investigation. He was the one who liaised with Scapatici. Their investigation concluded, and the two had a falling out as they couldn't agree who the informer was. To this day, it remains unclear how the British Army got wind of the attack. One source says that the British Army intelligence found out about the plot after spotting a known IRA man scouting a digger to steal. Another source claims one of the men involved in the attack was a tout, but was killed in the gunfire. There are also some sources that claim that many homes of IRA members were bugged with covert listening devices, and the location where the bomb was stored before the attack was under surveillance. We will probably never know exactly how British intelligence were aware of this attack, but for them, this was a resounding success, after years of losing their colleagues at the hands of IRA bombs and bullets. One of the British intelligence operatives, known by the pseudonym Anna, described the jubilance of the armed forces after the operation. Quote, "There was a huge party. It probably went on for 24 hours. A lot of beer was drunk. We were jubilant. We thought it was a job well done. It sent shockwaves through the terrorist world that we were back on top." They're all volunteers and actively engaged against the British Army. They're at war, as they would describe it. My attitude is that if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. We were just happy at the end of the day to be alive ourselves. This attack was the single greatest loss of IRA members during the Troubles. But the loss of life didn't affect the IRA as much as the fact that it showed exactly how compromised they were by infiltrators and double agents. For the IRA, there was nothing worse than a tout. Anyone who was caught, or even in some cases just suspected of being a tout, would face a very violent end. The squad who investigated these people were known as the Nutting Squad, and were universally feared by anyone in the IRA. I'll be doing an episode on it eventually, but there are a number of people who were suspected of being touts, who were taken by the IRA and never seen again. They are known as the Disappeared. The Loughgall ambush took out some key members of the East Tyrone IRA, but they soon regrouped and continued carrying out attacks against the RUC and British Army. One year after the Loughgall ambush, they bombed a bus in Ballygally, killing 8 soldiers. The IRA also attacked the Loughgall RUC station again in 1990 with a £1,000 bomb, The station was heavily damaged, but there were no casualties. Legal proceedings took place in 1988, which found that the evidence did not warrant the prosecution of any persons involved in the shootings. Six families of the individuals killed in the ambush then launched civil proceedings against the Ministry of Defence, and an inquest was held in 1995. The families of the victims left the inquest because their barrister had been denied a copy of the depositions prior to the witnesses taking the stand. The barrister then lodged for a judicial review on this. The case then went to the European Court of Human Rights in 2001, who ruled that the nine people killed had their rights violated by the failure of the British government to conduct a proper investigation that was dependent and transparent into their deaths. Then, in 2011, the Northern Irish Historical Inquiries Team, or HET for short, concluded that the IRA team did fire first, and that they could not have been safely arrested. They concluded that the British Army was justified in opening fire. According to Mairead Kelly, who is the director of the Lochgall Truth and Justice campaign, and sister of Patrick Kelly, who died in the ambush, the HET report was a flawed report and was under review by a fresh team of HET investigators. Just before, a different report by a different group found that any case where the state, especially the British military, had been involved in were not investigated without bias and were not treated the same as all other cases where the state was not involved in killings. As of writing, in late 2020, it is intended that a new inquest will be held. When that will be is still unclear. Though this ambush happened over 33 years ago, the event is still shrouded in controversy. There are many opinions and interpretations on the matter. Some Republicans believe that the SAS had always intended to kill all the members and had no intention of arresting any of them. If you remember the Gibraltar episode from season 1, it is a similar argument to that, that the British Army were operating a shoot-to-kill policy. On the Republican side, the argument is that the killing of the IRA operatives was completely unjustified and that the British Army had a moral and legal obligation to uphold the law. Here is Sinn Féin politician Barry McAlduff speaking about the incident in 2011.
What happened at Lochgall is quite clear, is that there was a shoot-to-kill operation in place and nine men were killed, eight of whom were Irish Republicans.
Many would argue that the IRA were going in to shoot.
Eight of whom were IRA volunteers.
Can you address that point?
And one of them was a civilian, Anthony Hughes. My wife's brother was one of the eight volunteers killed at Lochgall. I'm not going to disown Patrick Kelly or any of the other people who were killed at Lochgall. And I'll make the point that those who did the killing at Lochgall in County Armagh in May 1987 were far from their homes, English soldiers in County Armagh, and they killed Irish people on Irish soil. So was it a war or was it not a war? If it was a war, then the British government are wrong. They have said all along it wasn't a war. They were bound by the laws of democracy, law enforcement and all of that. And if that's the case, then they should have attempted to arrest them.
On the other side, the argument is that the IRA members were on their way to execute RUC officers, so their killing was completely justified. One of the RUC officers who was involved in the operation said of the attack, quote, "They were there to kill us. These guys were responsible for lots and lots of deaths in that area and other parts of the province. Dead terrorists are better than dead policemen." The driver of one of the scout cars said that despite the passing of 30 years, he still thinks about what happened at Lochgall. Quote, "I still think about it every day. You always felt something hanging over you. There was nothing resolved. There was no conclusion."